Hey friends, Matt Spraker here from the Accelerators podcast. If you haven't heard about RadFormation, you are missing out. 6 years ago, three medical physicists came together to create automation solutions they wish they had when they were working in the clinic. Their first offerings, ClearCheck and EasyFluence, changed the way departments approached dose constraints, plan reporting, and 3D planning. Today, RadFormation offers a variety of tools to optimize your practice and help clinics get more done in less time. You won't meet a more passionate team in radiation oncology. Visit radformation.com to learn more. Welcome to the Accelerators podcast. We are radiation oncologists Matt Spraker, Simil Parikh, and Anna Brown, and we're bringing you news and views with guests from all over the field. The discussions on this show are not medical advice, and they represent our own opinions and not those of our employers. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
All right. So welcome, everyone. We'll get started right at 6 o'clock Central. So welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of the Accelerators podcast. We're really excited today to come to you live. So we may have some people joining in live here. I'm Anna Brown, one of the co-hosts of the Accelerators and a radiation oncologist in community practice in Central Wisconsin. We'll just introduce the other co-hosts participating and then each of our guests.
Yeah, I'm Matt Spraker. I'm one of the co-hosts of the Accelerators podcast. I am a radiation oncologist, also in a hospital-based practice in Denver, Colorado. Maybe we'll talk about types of practices at some point. And then how about our guests? Go ahead.
Yes, my name is Jasmine Tabb. Recently graduated from the University of South Alabama, and I matched radiation oncology residency at the University of California, San Diego.
Hey, everyone. My name is Ashlyn Clark. I recently graduated from the University of Alabama at Birmingham School of Medicine, and I matched into radiation oncology at the University of Utah.
Hi, everybody. It's so great to be here today. My name is Tony Mangini, and I graduated from the University of Washington in Seattle, and I will be doing my radiation oncology training at UC San Francisco.
Awesome. Thank you all very much for joining. I just wanted to shout out that I trained in residency at UW in Seattle, and I loved it there. And I think I'm loving all the Mountain West and West Coast representation we have going on the podcast here. All right. Well, Anna, do you want to, I think we have a nice outline that was organized kind of in the pre-meeting. So why don't you go ahead and kick us off with kind of the first round of questions here that we were going to talk about.
All right. Perfect. So for round one, so essentially, the field of RadOnc has gone through, many changes, and, there's been a lot of, recent concerns with kind of match rates being low, things like that. But I think, with this episode, we really wanted to highlight, things that are really exciting about the field and kind of, positive things you guys, all chose RadOnc and are, super excited about it. So for the first round, though, with kind of the concerns in light of, might you be kind of anxious or nervous about? So we'll kind of, start with the guests and then kind of, Matt and I can fill in for, what we're kind of anxious or nervous about, but staying away from things like the job.
The number one thing I'm anxious about is just the huge learning curve from PGY1 to PGY2. I think there's going to be a learning curve for intern year. And then once I finally get used to it, you're going to be thrown into something brand new. And everyone always talks about how it's just, you're basically starting over. And so I think that's always a little anxiety for me whenever I think about it.
Yeah, I definitely feel the same way. That learning curve is going to be very, very scary. I think another big thing for me that I'm kind of worried about is just I have a lot of goals and like things that I want to start programs in the field, and just doing those things while also learning to be a radiation oncologist, I think is going to be a little difficult. Kind of figuring out that balance.
I kind of second that a little bit. I think it's like kind of creating your own like niche or kind of area in the field. Like, for example, Twitter is not my strong suit. I'm trying to get on board with that. So kind of in today's technology and world, like how to get yourself out there, and like whether it be a subspecialty within radiation oncology or something completely unrelated, but that's kind of, your mark on the field. I think I'm excited, but also anxious about how I can kind of do that for myself while also learning the basics of being a radiation oncologist.
No, I was going to say, so before I answer, I just wanted to point out really quick that the learning curve thing, because I was actually, I think it's a fantastic, like, first thing to bring up. It's I've argued before on Twitter, Tony, that like it's actually probably, in my opinion, the hardest learning curve, or one of the hardest learning curves in graduate medical education, because you not only go from like basically an intern to being a fellow, like functionally you sort of act a little bit more like a fellow as a radiation oncology resident. But you know, there's all the technical information that comes with it. One thing that I did want to point out though, is that one of my favorite things is watching, the PGY2 residents or, you know, post-grad year two residents kind of move on to that third year. And then when the new class starts, that is a time where you learn how much you've learned and you really see it like right in front of your face, and you pick things up so quickly. And the vast majority of residents that I've interacted with, like by the time they're finishing, like they're ready to go, right? So you'll be a little frustrated that you're still a resident. And so people really always seem to feel ready. And one thing that most people probably would agree with is like, regardless of your training program or the, you know, people rank them and there's prestige and all that stuff, but all of them really do provide good clinical training for the most part. And so like you will feel ready. It'll be a steep learning curve, but you'll definitely pick it up. And I think that'll be pretty, pretty good. Yeah,
I guess. Kind of dovetailing off that, and looks like we've got a shout out from Brian Lally, one of our favorite radiation oncologists. Learning curve is easier with great teachers. So totally agree. And I'd say that, the first day, right, like at least, you know, kind of my experience with like intern year and then with RadOnc residency, it's almost like intern year all over again, but like RadOnc specific, that just like kind of I learned a lot to like go with it. You know, it's kind of like, you know, I'm used to like being really on top of stuff, but there's just going to be a lot of overwhelming stuff. And so I like that each of you talked about like you want to also make space for yourself as a person. And I honestly wish I would have done that more. And so that is actually one of the things, you know, in terms of what I'm anxious or nervous about, you know, as my career grows, and there's so many things I'm excited about work-wise, but kind of also not losing sight of myself as a person, because I think actually that's one of our greatest strengths we can offer patients is connecting to them as people. Yeah. And seeing them as people first, patient second. Okay, so jumping into any final thoughts on the anxious, nervous stuff. Otherwise, we can jump to the round two, which is what we're most excited about. So this is what, really excited to talk with all of you guys about, you know, RadOnc or otherwise, you know, in your career, but especially RadOnc, what you're most excited about. So maybe we'll start with each of our guests again.
I'm happy to take this one first this time. So one thing I'm excited about is kind of what got me involved in the field to begin with is I was an engineer by training before I went into medical school. And that's kind of all the people at the University of Washington that had kind of that dual background of engineering and medicine are really the ones that took me under their wing. And I'm really excited, I think, as a future radiation oncologist to get to kind of play with the engineering medicine kind of interface, whether that be through research or some other kind of, you know, opportunity. Mm-hmm.
I am really excited, just to be here. I think that, you know, my entire life I've always said, oh, I want to be a radiation oncologist. And it was this, you know, far off dream of when I grew up, and now it's here and I'm finally, you know, actively doing it. And so I think I'm really excited about that. I'm also really excited to finally be in a position to kind of give back. I think that I had a lot of people along the way that helped me and introduced me to the field. And I think that I'm just really ready to go ahead and do that for other people and tell them about radiation oncology and just really spread the word.
Yeah, I'm just super excited to be here as well, Jasmine. I found radiation oncology a little bit later in my career. I didn't even know what it was until I was a third year on the rotation. And so I'm just excited to get to know the community and meet a lot of people and sort of find what my niche is, like Tony was saying, within the field, and just learn more and kind of dive into, you know, where I see myself in the future as a radiation oncologist. That's something that really excites me. And I was able to go to ASTRO that last year. So I feel like the community was like really awesome, and it felt kind of like a small family there. And I'm excited to continue to grow those relationships as well.
That's awesome. And
I was going to say, I think it's a really, those are great answers. And one thing that overlaps between them is sort of like growing this community and teaching people and communicating, you know, helping people get into the field of radiation oncology. Jasmine, it's unusual to learn about it so early to be a kid and want to be a radiation oncologist. I was like Ashlyn, where I did not know about it until my third year. And I was actually getting anxious that I wasn't going to find something that I love, because I looked at ortho and ENT and all these other things. And I just, it's a very unique field, but I feel like for the people that it's a great fit for, they just love it. And I think I can kind of see that in all of you. One of the things that I think we need really a lot more of is people just out talking about the field. So there's less people that don't hear about it until the third year. But we do a lot of time on Twitter, and like a lot of discussion this week that came out of ASCO was just about layperson understanding of radiation and the pros and cons and what the side effects can be. And, you know, sometimes that does get overblown. It might be a battle we're fighting our whole lives, but I think when we have people, you know, Jasmine, you've wanted to be one for a long time, or like Tony, you have an engineering background. I think one of the most rewarding parts of my current job, I've left, you know, academics, but just last week I was giving a presentation to the Hospital Foundation about brachytherapy and what it is. And I'm telling you, when people walk in that vault and they see the equipment, and they're just like amazed at what we can do. And it's really fun to kind of show that off. And so definitely encourage you as residents to do some community engagement, whether it's with students or just lay people or other doctors in the hospital, and try to get them down in the basement. Or if you're lucky like me, if you have windows on the first floor, you know, and get it exposed, because I think, you know, we're a very small field that's not known to a lot of people. And just something I wish I could have done more as a resident was like kind of channel that excitement into sort of advocacy for the field.
No, go ahead.
I was going to share one thing. I was lucky enough, my kind of department asked me to actually make like a career advising video for radiation oncology. So I got to kind of almost what we're talking about today, make like a 15-minute video that they will broadcast to all the like second, third year medical students, just to even get them hopefully exposure to what radiation oncology is before they even start their rotation. So I think things like that are great.
That's awesome, Tony. That's so cool, you know, as like a student to be able to contribute and help, you know, recruit other people to the field. Because I think, you know, there's, I think the visibility issue, right, of just not enough people know about it or hear about it really late. Actually, my situation is kind of similar to Jasmine's, where maybe not as a little kid, but as like a, you know, freshman in college, you know, I actually ended up randomly shadowing a radiation oncologist. And that really fit, you know, like change the trajectory of, I was actually doing biomedical engineering, but then I was always interested in art and kind of, you know, artsy things. And so it's, and also talking to people and helping people. So it's like something that combines all of that, the like techie stuff, the art stuff, and the great communication. And like Matt was saying, there's a great way to like continue to advocate for our field and kind of give back. And even like in the community setting, I've been able to give lectures to like students and also like nursing students at a local technical college about oncology in general. And so these are ways we can give back, you know, and kind of, you know, help just everyone learn about not just our field, but kind of the role that oncology plays more generally. So that's awesome. There's so much exciting things and so much you guys are excited about. And I guess the other thing I'd say to both the points that Ashlyn and Jasmine made is kind of like when you like dreamed of being, you know, radiation oncologist, or kind of, you know, getting to that point, like you guys are right at the precipice before starting that process. And then kind of on the other side of it, like I remember the greatest moment was like getting the board certification thing. It's like, wow, like board certified radiation oncologist, that's like, you know, life goal.
When you're on the other side of it and you realize you're done taking all the tests, right? That's like the best. Yeah.
I should have added the anxiety thing, oral boards. That sounds petrifying.
Yeah, so it will be petrifying, I think, for good reason. It's like, it's a lot of material, right? But the good thing is, right, the residency programs. And now there's so many cool resources too, like the At the Beam podcast co-host that we hosted recently and Arrow are teaming up to create like communities of like board review stuff. Yeah. So I think the cool thing is there's so many more exciting, well thought out resources available now that it's not quite as like hush hush as it was before.
With regard to that, I would say just real quick to allay your anxiety there, I think it's something that you can start early on and just realize that it's a practice skill, right? I think if you're someone who can like stand in front of an intimidating person and answer questions now today, you're that whole aspect, you're good. You just got to study the material. But there's a lot of people that just, they struggle with that. And I think that if you start early, there's this sort of little hump to get over where people worry about looking dumb or, you know, like getting it wrong in front of their peers. I remember when I was kind of a chief resident, we just worked really hard to get the early residents to start doing that right away, because, you know, it's a lifelong skill. You want to be able to put yourself out there and make suggestions, and you're going to do that in tumor board as an independent physician. And the reality is that in the real world of medicine, like everyone's, you know, or at least where I work now, everyone's friendly and super nice. And I think that if you say things and there's disagreements, people kind of, you know, move forward from that, and everyone kind of respects each other. And so it's just kind of getting to know yourself and learning that you can kind of put yourself out there and say it. That seems to be one of the scariest parts about oral boards for people, is just kind of having it be an oral exam, right? The act of sitting there and answering questions.
Yeah, that was certainly true for me, because it's like, you know, I'm the one that like triple checks everything and like I'm very on top of it. But when it comes to like just like that pressure of someone like pimping it, right? It's just for some reason my brain freezes. And so, you know, the good thing is that through residency programs, through working with like study groups or, you know, talking with your friends and your colleagues. And for me, like being an audiovisual learner, there's a lot more resources out there now. Like the Astro Refreshers are a really good resource. The Astro Anal Media, you know, there's like lots more things nowadays. And then Acro, to plug Acro, there's like kind of a mock oral boards that they do like at the annual meeting that's like really fun. And actually, I think both Matt and I participated in that this past year, although ironically Matt was doing the question. I was like kind of going in like, I've already done oral boards, but I'm curious how these conversations go. But kind of the nice thing is, you advance further in your career, once you get past the anxiety of kind of looking dumb, then it's just a conversation of just being thoughtful about thinking it through, right? Because at least with oral, they don't expect you to know everything, but just to think through and be logical and be safe. But moving on from that, because that's still a long ways off from where you guys are at right now. So switching gears to like research stuff, in terms of, you know, you guys may or may not have had exposure to kind of RADONC research, you know, that tends to be emphasized a lot in like the match process, like having publications, having abstracts. But what do you think that we could work on as a field, you know, research wise, either research you want to do, like questions we think should be answered, or just stuff that we should be focusing on more? So again, we'll start with our guests.
I can start if you want. Oh, Jasmine, you can go.
No, go ahead.
Okay. I don't know. I haven't looked into this a lot, but I'm really interested in some quality improvement research. And just as a background, I and my twin sister both actually had to have radiation this spring for some keloid treatment. And I got it done at a community practice and she got it done at a university practice. And her wait times were like sometimes triple, quadruple mine. And so I think looking into the factors that are, you know, behind the wait times for patients at those big centers where they really want to get treatment and they know they're getting, you know, the best, or that's what they are perceiving. I just feel like that can be such a barrier to patients, especially those who are working during treatment or who are traveling a long way. And just to see how we can mediate that for patients and help them get their treatment more quickly and more efficiently.
I think that's a really good point, just to jump in real quick before anyone else answers. And that's actually something I'm super interested in. So like in the community setting I'm at, one of the reasons I chose this practice is that I'm really interested in like health disparities, and not just, I did a lot of work on like racial disparities in research, but really, you know, race is one issue. There's many, many issues that tie into that, the social determinants of health. I think it's interesting that you mentioned that like in a community setting, you actually had quicker treatment, and right, arguably for like a keloid, you know, a benign condition, which I actually do hope we see more treatment of benign stuff with radiation, because I think it can really provide benefit. But, you know, for something that wouldn't necessarily need like the complexity of like an academic center, you know, it was most likely, I'm guessing, like electron treatments, you know, things that like can be set up simply, then maybe the convenience factor, right, for patients of like parking, where they don't have to pay for parking and getting in right away to see the doc, and like, you know, like those might actually matter a lot to patients versus kind of navigating a really complex thing and getting really confused. Not that all centers are like that are big, but there can be a lot more like onerous on the patients to kind of navigate that. With varying levels of resource for helping at just larger centers generally, whether they're community or academic.
One of the centers, I have to try to remember what it is, we'll put it in the show notes, but one of the centers published a paper. It was actually a pretty sort of, you know, I'm happy they did it. It was a brave paper to publish, but they ran
an analysis of patient satisfaction measures, basically, in all of their centers. They looked at the main, like kind of big main hub, and then the satellite, the community satellite ones. And they actually published that the patient satisfaction was higher at the satellite centers than at the main hub. And they talk about reasons that could be. We have a whole episode on problems with the patient satisfaction values. And so, you know, you have to kind of take them with a grain of salt. But I think that it was a really, it validates, you know, Ashlyn, kind of what you said, where I think a lot of people do value, you can get in, you park right in front, you walk in, you get your treatment, you go home. It's like a much faster kind of thing. And you'll see that, like you said, Anna, kind of in both kinds of systems. It's just a center size thing. Jasmine, you were going to give an answer, I think, about research.
I think that, you know, one of the things that I'm looking forward to, you know, really diving into is pediatric survivorship research. I think that I have seen that there's not a ton on pediatric survivorship, really. And it, you know, I mean, these children, like, just from my own personal experience. So my brother is actually the reason why I knew about radiation oncology. He had cancer for about 10 years. And just kind of, you know, seeing him out, you know, 5 years down the line, and like the things that he's dealing with now, you know, that no one talked about, like the PTSD of just having cancer. I think that one of the times that it really kind of hit me, like, wow, this is still an ongoing issue for him. So he did receive radiation to his brain at one point, because it had spread to his, or it was in his CNS. And, you know, so he would get these headaches sometimes during his treatment. And now when he gets headaches, he kind of freaks out. And he's like, I've got cancer. You've got to call the doctor. I'm not going to calm down until someone tells me that I don't have cancer. And, you know, just seeing that in him as a 19-year-old, and, you know, he started this process at 5 years old. Like, I think that there are just a lot of things that we can continue to research and improve for this pediatric population moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. What's one thing that's really cool, and you'll see it more and more, and I think you've entered a great field for it, because there's kind of rapid development of tools that are allowing us to catch kind of patient reported outcome data a little bit easier from patients over long periods of time. There's a couple of really, you know, kind of pretty growing sort of rising star researchers in radiation oncology that are working on that kind of stuff. And so I think once you're there and you're like deep in it and as a resident, you're going to have nice tools at your disposal. It'll make it much easier to study those things than was there 10 years ago. You know, I think it'll be really nice.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for, you know, sharing such personal, stories. And I think that, you know, Jasmine, for you, kind of the exciting thing too, with, as we've kind of alluded to, with radiation oncology being such a small field, I think that one of the cool things is that, I guess maybe trying to put myself back in your guys' shoes, like, I remember going to ASTRO and kind of seeing people that, you know, had like published these like big publications and just like, you know, being kind of starstruck, like, oh my gosh, I just saw, you know, such and such and such and such. But kind of the cool thing is that wow factor, you know, it's like these people are still awesome, but then you kind of realize how approachable some of them are. And especially once you're kind of like in the field, right? Like, you know, in, you know, residency and kind of learning the trade and kind of working in a program and going to ASTRO meetings, that a lot of times, at least in my experience, people are very approachable. So even, for example, like I'd say at least like 5 or 6 of my publications were like on Twitter, like we'd have a Twitter chat and then we'd be like, oh my gosh, we should just like, you know, publish this. And, you know, a lot of them are like, you know, my age and kind of also trainees, but, you know, like we got some mentors involved in that and kind of, you know, like pretty senior people. And so that's the cool thing is just that, you know, and for like niche interests like that, where there are, you know, not too many, you know, pediatric specific rad oncs that are focused on like survivorship things, but it's such an important topic that you can definitely kind of seek that out, you know, whether ASTRO or other, you know, ACRO, other meetings that then kind of, you know, an ACRO specifically is like a much smaller meeting and kind of for, you know, trainees in particular, you can like just approach like these kind of legends in the field and kind of, you know, work with them. So awesome.
Tony, what about you? Yeah.
Yeah. One thing I was going to just kind of speak to, it's a kind of role specific, but I think it speaks to kind of forming connections with other groups in medicine, is I'm interested in radiopharmaceuticals and theranostics, which I know are kind of a you know, oftentimes nuclear medicine, I kind of deals with that depending on the institution. But I think that that's one great opportunity to work with, you know, other people in, you know, in medicine that kind of work with similar concepts as radiation oncologists, you know, nuclear energy. And I think that something I'd be interested in would be working with those groups on clinical trials or maybe more drug development and things like that. And I think that the more that we can branch out and work with other groups, the better it'll push our field forward.
You just made a lot of people really happy by saying that. It's definitely a hot topic in the field. I actually just got off a call talking about that for my own center. And I think it's something that's going to look very different. You know, what I have no question that when you all are graduating from residency, it's going to look quite different than it does today. There's several things coming down the line. And you know, don't give it up to NucMed. Definitely keep it in the radiation oncology department. It can be a challenge. It's a lot of effort to build these programs, but there's some really nice models around the country to follow. And there's a lot of radiation oncologists that have been quite successful working in that space. All really great things that you all are excited about. I'm excited. Yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely. Also, yeah, lots of exciting stuff. And yeah, Tony, I think as we've mentioned to you before, there are some rad oncs, you know, specifically working in kind of the, you know, theranostic space and kind of radiopharm space. I know one off the top of my head, Brandon Mancini, who I know I've seen at ACRA recently and like actually is like in kind of in like an industry clinical hybrid role that he and others should definitely put you in touch with to connect about that. But I think that's great because, right, like, especially with, you know, PSMA PET and kind of like, you know, all the exciting stuff coming down the pike, I think there's a lot of really awesome stuff. All right. So kind of switching gears again for other things that like your specialty can work on in the future, but on the non-research side of things. So whether, you know, we'll kind of keep that broad, you know, what non-research things do you think that RadOnc as a field could work more on based on your guys' exposure to RadOnc so far?
I can go first for this one. One for me, I think, is in training or I guess medical student education is kind of having them have more exposure to community practice. You know, at my center, a lot of all the medical students, we really only get to see subspecialty, you know, radiation oncologists who work on one disease site, maybe two disease sites. So I think it would be helpful for medical students who are maybe interested in not, I think sometimes they get this idea that it's just academic medicine, it's very research heavy, and they have to be super specialized. That might scare some students off. I think being able to see what a community radiation oncologist who may see five different patients with five different disease sites in a day looks like would be, I think, helpful for medical students in making that decision.
I love that. I think that because I think especially with RadOnc being so academic, especially from like going through the academic kind of, you know, med school residency, that's really the main lens you see. And I know I was lucky at UMich that with my residency, we actually got exposure to kind of a community setting. And that, in addition to my intern year, really kind of encouraged me to look for more of a community setting. So that was just the right balance for me. But I agree that having med students, you know, if the only view you see of a RadOnc is like the super subspecialized academician, you know, that's a pretty narrow view of RadOnc, and we're kind of broader than that.
Have you all had a chance to do that yet as med students? Has anyone been able to, you know, I know, Ashlyn, you just told us you were kind of in one of the departments, but did anyone have a chance
to interact? I didn't really like get to work with anyone that's community practice. I did get to do some work in like a satellite setting. That was sort of the closest thing. It was nice just to get a, you know, like Tony just said, different diseases for each patient or disease sites rather. So it definitely wasn't a majority of my time, maybe a couple of days on my rotation. Mm-hmm.
I haven't at all. That's kind of why I bring it up, because all of my experiences were very disease site specific, where you'd see four or five people with kind of similar diseases in a day. So I would really like to see what radiation oncology in a smaller community setting looks like.
Jasmine, what about you? What do you feel like non-research things that the specialty needs to work on? We're on the right question. Sorry, I got lost for a second.
You know, I think one of the main things is just people knowing about the field. I think that, you know, just as we've continually said, there's just not this exposure to the field. I think that we've got to focus more on doing more outreach and education, not just in the medical schools, but undergrads as well, and even high school. You know, I feel like a lot of other specialties do a great job of really involving themselves in the community and making their presence known in the community. In most places that I have been to, I have seen that, you know, radiation oncology at any level. They're just not really involved in the community like that. I think that I have heard of a couple of places that have now started programs for, you know, high school and middle school students, where they go and teach them about not just radiation oncology, of course, but just oncology in general. And I feel like by us doing that, we really spread the word more about radiation oncology, and really get kind of out of this idea of what a radiation oncologist looks like. I think that that's a big thing for me is, you know, going into this, as I said, I've wanted to do this for so many years. Everyone has always told me, well, you don't seem like a radiation oncologist. You don't act like a radiation oncologist. And I think that, you know, we have to end this stigma, whatever that stigma is, you know, these people that sit in the basement and don't talk to people, you know, like I talk a ton, you know, I'm always outside, I'm outgoing, like whatever that is, you know, like you can be a radiation oncologist. It's not just the MD PhDs or, you know, someone who is super, super focused on one specific type of research. So yeah, I think we could just all around in general do a better job of, you know, just really broadening what a radiation oncologist looks like and showing people radiation oncology as a field.
I think that, yeah, those are excellent points, Jasmine, and I 100% agree. And one thing that definitely, if you don't know about already, you'll want to get involved in is something called SWRO. So like the Society of Women Radiation Oncologists. And just because I'm like an Instagrammer and on Instagram all the time, you know, guilty pleasure. But anyway, you know, on Instagram actually recently, so there was a radiation oncology resident who passed away, but she was kind of trying to change like the idea about what a radiation oncologist looks like, you know, being from like a minority background. And also, you know, like she, you know, was kind of like influencer like, but for RadOnc. So she would like post reels of like, oh, you know, here, learn more about RadOnc. And just that was like engagement in the social media sphere. But I 100% agree that like engagement with the community is such an important thing that, you know, we may or may not do a lot of. I've actually personally done a little bit of that here being in a community setting, but, you know, it was like really rewarding. So I actually talked about like pediatric oncology and just talking to a bunch of like nursing students, but then, right, you don't necessarily have to talk about radiation, but then they might come up to you and be like, oh, so you're a radiation oncologist, and just like getting exposure in that way, right, just strengthens like, you know, kind of the PR, or, you know, that we're like engaging with people in a really positive way, especially because, you know, radiation generally kind of gets a bad rap. And also that idea of like in the dark basement, can't tell you how many times people are like, oh, like you're my radiologist. And then you have to be like, no, the radiologist is the one in the dark room. I'm the one that's like socially interacting with you. And like, yeah. So
that particularly may never go away. That just happened to me with like, that. Again, I was giving this presentation. It was a very regimented thing. And the woman introduced me as a radiologist. And I just kind of said, yeah, I'm Matt Spraker. I'm the radiation oncologist. I just kind of moved on from it, but you'll get very used to correcting that mistake because that one is just deep seated, I guess. But I think, Jasmine, to your point, it does seem like it's changing, you know, at least a little bit. I think there definitely is more work to do, but it, like you said, I think what really needs to happen is just making people like yourself that are passionate about the field and talk about it in a very passionate way, and just making you visible to the community, right? So that way people can see that's a radiation oncologist. And it's not always just, I mean, like we can say it's all like old white guys, right? Like it's how it's been. And I think we can move away from that. You know, I realize that, you know, I'm probably the last one to be able to comment on it, but I think that it does seem like it's changing a little bit. And it actually seems like, I think it's already having positive effects on the field with new ideas. And we have, you know, some prominent people that are pretty like prominent on Twitter. They work a lot on a lot of these oncology kind of like news sites. They're at up in the stage on ASCO in front of medical oncologists, surgeons. And I think just kind of showing them that, you know, we've had a long-standing role designing the standards of care for many types of cancers, but we kind of just do it from the basement, so to speak. And so, you know, breaking that, I think is going to be pretty important. And so, I'm excited for the future because it seems like it's making some headway, which is good.
Yeah, and just final plug here before we get to Ashlyn's exciting comments, but I think the other thing to keep in mind is, right, that like, you know, whether it's like elected representatives or like leaders in the community that representation matters. So for patients, you know, seeing that like, you know, for example, like I'm the first like female radiation oncologist in my practice here, like full time. And so, right, like patients being able to choose like a female provider versus a male provider, that matters, but also to inspire, you know, younger students and younger kids that like, you know, Jasmine, to your point of like, oh, you know, kind of getting rid of this notion of, you know, that a doctor has to look a certain way or a radiation oncologist has to look a certain way. You know, that like we are all individuals capable of, you know, amazing things, and just to look beyond, you know, the surface, that like the effort that we're doing should speak for itself. But sorry, Ashlyn, let's see, yes, the question of the non-research things we need to work on.
One thing that I think that radiation oncology as a whole could work on, and I wish Samuel was here so we could talk about this a little bit more, but I've kind of been following along on his journey of treating arthritis and plantar fasciitis and other benign conditions, keloids, you know, whatever. And I think that it would be great for the field to expand that into practices where residents are training. I know there's a couple of, you know, volume or other things that are preventing this from happening easily. But I think it would prepare residents so well in whenever they move out into the field, especially if they go into community practice, and give them that confidence to, or just make them comfortable treating these conditions and offering that to patients, especially because it's not really that known about as a treatment for those conditions, and it can really be impactful to patients. And so just being able to offer that to more patients.
Yeah, that's a great point, Ashlyn. And I can actually maybe share something for the show notes, because actually one of the lectures that we have available for our radiation therapy students that are training is like a whole lecture on like treatment of benign conditions in radiation. And it was actually like a really awesome lecture to give, because it kind of went into the history and all that. But with my experience treating like Dupuytren's at pretty high volume at UMich, I was able to actually bring that service here to the community. You know, something that like my, you know, colleagues would not have necessarily felt comfortable with, like, because they hadn't treated as many cases, but then, right, was able to treat that patient, and then that might recruit other patients. So I totally agree. I think that there's a huge potential, you know, using radiation, not just for cancerous conditions, but also benign, if we do it in a thoughtful way.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I've started a program actually in my current practice. It's, you know, you'll learn as you go through and you try to start these programs that there are some organizational barriers in any center, just, you know, getting people to hear about it and then refer in. It's very different than oncology, just the patterns of practice, where you get the patients from and how they hear about it. But I will tell you, and Sim would agree with this as well, it is incredibly rewarding. And like, you know, cancer care is very rewarding. We all love, I mean, we're all here for a reason, right? Everyone's passionate about the field. We love the field. But I got to admit to you, like, you know, it's a different thing. There's like no side effects because the dose is so low. So you're not really managing toxicities and things like that. But like just the someone who's very debilitated from their arthritis. And when you're starting your program, a lot of the patients you're going to get are people that are like not eligible for hip replacements or, you know, or shoulder replacements, things like that. And, you know, they're just kind of living with it. When you show their primary care doctor that there's an option they've never heard of, you know, those people, they love to have options for their patients. So they're very excited. And then when you get, you know, these complete responses to pain where people tell you they have their life back, and it really is like, it's a very unique thing that I had not seen until the last year or two. And it's been it's been really super rewarding. And so I'm thrilled to hear you say that. There's going to be more and more resources, I think, for you. As Anna said, we have a podcast that reviews that, and Austin Dove did a lot of nice work putting that paper together, kind of get it known to more Americans. It's a standard of care in Europe. And so they probably think we're all talking a little silly, but I think that you're going to have more resources available to you by the time you're graduating. And I would absolutely encourage you to kind of go down that path even before. Try to bring it up in your, you know, in your residency training and see how that goes, because it's really a unique kind of rewarding thing.
Yeah, that's awesome. Sorry to have left you out in my discussion of the answer, but I also worked with Austin when I did my way at Vanderbilt. So
Okay. So that's where you got indoctrinated about doing benign radiation therapy. Yeah. No, and I don't know if you all saw it, but the Astro elections are going on. We're not going to really talk about them, but Samir Keel, one of the candidates for president, had said that he wants to make the 2025 Astro meeting about benign radiotherapy, I was laying in bed last night reading it and I was like, no way. And my wife was like, what the hell are you doing? It's midnight. And so it's a really bold thing to say. And I think that we deserve a lot of research there. There's a lot of really cool radiobiology to do. And I think that hearing you say that is great. So Simil can have some FOMO because I'm sure he'd be so excited to hear you say that on the podcast.
I know. Yeah, he'll have to fangirl later when he listens to the recording. I was just going to add the other kind of cool thing, and Ashton, maybe something that, might be a resource for you. So, because I mean, I knew about RadOnc as like a, oncology thing. And of course, it's in the name. Interestingly, I think only maybe one or two places actually call it like radiation medicine rather than like radiation oncology. But that was something that kind of caught my eye. I think I forget which center it is, but one of my friends at another specialty actually recently asked me, like, I've heard about radiation treating like, benign stuff. Do you ever think, we would change the name of the field? And, who knows, maybe down the road, it'll be radiation medicine. But anyway, the resource part. So like, I didn't know much about treating benign stuff until I did residency. And actually there was a pretty robust like Dupuytren's treatment at Michigan, to the point that like we had actually like a little printout to like mark the nodules and like the cording. And Dupuytren's is kind of this like, contracture that can develop. But like, anyway, the cool thing was I was able to bring like these printouts to now my practice. And the way that patients would, like Matt was alluding to, the way that patients would find like the particular attending that did the Dupuytren's treatment was there was like a database. So I'll have to find that and share it in the show notes. But like, there's like a database of like Dupuytren's providers, and essentially patients would just Google like who can treat Dupuytren's with radiation. Yeah. And they would just show up with like no notes, no nothing. So like as a resident, I remember just being like, who the heck, like, where's the like path report and all this stuff? And then like literally they would show up and I would be like, okay, the thing I need is like the printout for the hand, and then like draw the nodules. And that's exactly what I did with my patient. But anyway, that community might be a good thing for you to tap into if you're interested in like doing more research on this type of stuff. Like, you can maybe just email these people.
Yeah.
So that's moving awesome. To our, oh, sorry.
Hey, Tony, did you answer? We've lost track.
I think Tony answered the things, or maybe we didn't. I forget. Tony, I think you talked about
the not kind of community versus academic practice, and I think getting medical students exposure earlier to kind of the differences, so they can, I guess, so they know that there's an opportunity to work at a non-academic center if they chose the field.
You all are going to have some fans. These are huge topics that there's a lot of people that are very enthusiastic about them. All of them, honestly. And so I think it's going to be, it's great. This will be, you'll be popular heading into the field.
In the time it takes to read this ad, you could have OAR and CTV contours automatically generated and ready to review. If you've been hearing good things about AI contouring, it's not just hype. But there's even better news. Auto Contour by RadFormation just released a huge batch of new structure models. There are now 200 structures available that make contouring easier and faster. These include lymph nodes and bowel loops and MR models. A radiation oncologist on Twitter recently hailed these contours as game-changing. You have to see them. Check out Auto Contour for yourself at RadFormation.com.
Okay, so I think fifth round. So now thinking about non-clinical opportunities, so like industry, insurance, leadership roles, building apps, podcast advocacy. So I think, I think Tony, actually, in your response, you're kind of alluding to this, that like there's kind of this idea of RadOnc as like such a heavily academic thing, that kind of opportunities for, industry or, kind of these scholarly activities that are kind of non-traditionally scholarly are, and that was actually one of the initial inspirations for our podcast was, kind of getting away from like the, journals and kind of thinking more about, okay, how can we create scholarly work that doesn't necessarily, have the biases of journals and publications and presents a more broad view that highlights kind of underrepresented views. What are you guys kind of excited about or things you've heard about, in RadOnc or think that we could do better? Yeah, Tony, go ahead.
I can go since you kind of brought up what I had mentioned. I think would be like working with, you know, biotech companies or pharmaceutical companies, particularly to what I was interested in, radiopharmaceuticals, theranostics. But I think maybe just building more partnerships with other academic institutions that aren't necessarily university centers, but other biotech companies that are doing kind of research in the, you know, with cancer in general. So,
yeah, it's something that our field has kind of struggled with a little bit. I mean, I'll definitely admit that when I've talked to med students and they're heavily interested in, you know, industry research or drug development or things like that, I do think I genuinely think it's an easier path as a medical oncologist, just the way that things are structured. I mean, you basically go through training, you have a fellowship that's very research intensive, and then many jobs you come out, and there might be a significant component of protected time where you might only be in clinic 1 or 2 days a week. It's no secret that a lot of radiation oncologist jobs, you're in clinic, you know, 3, 4, 5 days a week. And so it's just set up a little bit differently. But I do think that there's been a shift. I mean, Anna, you've probably noticed it as well, too, that people recognize that problem, right? And we sort of feel like, you know, what the hell, like pharma's like going crazy with medical oncologists doing all these trials, you know, drug trials. And what, you know, why can't there be more there? And I'm definitely seeing more and more radiation oncologists kind of doing that. One thing I'd like to see, though, is, you know, not everything has to be drug development, right? So there are other ways to work with industry. Certainly easy examples are hardware companies. There's, you know, maybe you don't know all the little hardware things we have yet, but, you know, you could work with Varian who makes Linux, or there's like surface image guidance. There's different implants and things like that you could work with. And it doesn't have to be a drug. There are new indications as well. Have you all heard of the cardiac radioablation? So you guys probably have seen that. It's a benign indication. So not so benign, but a non-malignant indication, I guess I should say. And that's another one where it follows, you know, device approval pathways and kind of going down that FDA path. And so I do think it will change. And I know that that's, you know, it's an American medicine interest. So I don't expect it's going to go away anytime soon. But certainly you'll certainly see more of that. And then Tony, did you mention you were working as an engineer before medical school? Was that?
I did not. I did graduate school. So I did some research in engineering and kind of drug development and delivery. So that's something I'm interested in.
I did that as well. And I didn't do drug development. I did engineering graduate school before I went to med school. And you see your colleagues kind of like go off to industry and work for them. And you kind of go into this medicine world that sort of is a little insulated. And, you know, just to echo the comments that like Jasmine said, with sort of breaking open that to kind of get doctors out there, get radiation oncologists out there. It's just the same thing. It's not only the community, but also people that are working in industry with development of tech. Matt, go ahead.
Matt, I didn't realize you did engineering for your graduate work.
I was a fake engineer. I was not a real engineer. I did bioengineering and I like really struggled through all the math stuff worked I did functional MRI research with Parkinson's patients. And that's when I kind of was like, I want to be a doctor.
That's cool. Yeah. I did biomedical engineering. So it's not fake engineering, but it's like the soft, it's not like the.
So oh no, I am. I am. Yeah. If you asked me to like build something or model, whatever, okay. Like I would, I made it through physics. I was decent at physics for radiation. So just so you all know, you can be kind of weak at the math stuff and still pass that because it's basically just algebra. There's not too much there.
So. Yeah, it doesn't get, so crazy. Well,
that's go ahead, Ashlyn, what are you going to say?
Yeah, go ahead. Oh, I just said that's reassuring about the physics. I think I'm interested in like the tech apps thing. I was just kind of going off of what you guys had brought up. I have a little bit of experience in like digital art and creating like digital stuff and websites online, and so I love like Radonk Tables and their app, and I can never recreate something like that, but just kind of getting in that area of radiation oncology or just forums in general and kind of seeing what there is and how we can help either trainees or people who are out in the field kind of combine all the information to an easy to digest and easy to navigate space for them.
Yeah, it's massive need. I mean, you all, I'm sure you'll see this as interns for sure. Like the whole digital landscape of medicine is just wide open at this point, and patients are involved now too. You will learn very quickly. There's a large industry of apps that people make. You can always tell if someone's never set foot in a clinic and they make an app, and you're like, this is not this is not it. And so having doctors that are like really into that stuff, I think is really important. And thanks for shouting out Radon Tables. It's an amazing, one of the coolest things is radiation oncology, either residents or early career people have created these amazing resources that I'm kind of jealous with. You'll get very familiar with them as you go into radiation oncology residency with like eContour and Radon Tables, and you have all that data kind of right there on the phone. Yeah.
Oh yeah. And it's really been in like the past decade. Cause I'd say when I first started residency, yes. Like I remember I would like use my CME money to pay for radon questions. Cause I had heard about it through ROCSIG, which I kind of got involved in on like the ground level, which is like a kind of education collaborative org. But like none of my other co-residents heard of that. And they're like, what's that? But I was like, oh my gosh, it's like the UWorld for radon. And then of course, lo and behold, when everyone's studying for boards, everyone's like, yeah, I do radon questions. So like, be an early adopter of like,
it's amazing. If you have like when Simmel trained, like when they first invented computers, you know, that now he's not that old, but you know, like that kind of thing. But like, you know, I think when, you know, and we're not that far apart in training. And for me, it was like, there was this thing called Radon Wiki books or Wiki. And it was basically, these couple of doctors that just compiled a bunch of research to kind of help you, and you would use that. And then I think they still use the red book or the blue book. It's like a handbook of basically studies and stuff. But now it's amazing. And you'll continue. I use eContour like pretty much weekly. You know, cases that I see a million times, I don't use it really, but definitely things I might refresh my memory or look at the little notes. It's really such a tremendous resource, right on tables as well. And then the constraints one. And so I am a little jealous for the three of you, because you're going to have, I'm not sure that residency will be easier because of it, because it's just an immense amount of information, but having to go find it is just going to be a lot easier, I think.
Well, so. Yeah. And I think that's the thing, because right, I think like, you know, there's just so much advancement, especially like on the MedOnc side of just like all the different agents. I mean, even now it's like incredible to keep up with. I mean, ASCO just happened and there's like, you know, so many approvals for different things. And I think the cool thing is having these digital resources like, you know, Radon Tables, Radon Review, you know, Radon Questions and like quiz mode, just to kind of like, yeah, knowing where to look for things. And definitely as like a community radiation oncologist. So yeah, eContour is kind of always pulled up, and then always like NCCN guidelines too, because it's just pretty much everything. And I'll use that as a patient education tool too. If they're kind of confused about things, I'll be like, oh, here's a flow chart and here's why we're doing this for your, you know, prostate cancer.
Can I shout out? Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Apologize.
Oh, no. You were going to shout out some.
I wanted to give an answer for this one, because I want to plug. We haven't talked about advocacy at all. And I do want to kind of just plug that, because this is something that I was not introduced to until after I graduated residency, really. And there, you know, the easy ways, the things that people do hear about is donating to the PACs, you know, the political action committees, right? Yeah. Of the society. So there's ASTRO and ACRO. Of course, we have to talk about ACRO PAC. I think they're great. They do awesome reports and kind of tell you, you know, what's going on in Washington. It's hard to, you know, I don't think it should be expected that trainees have to do that, because I think money's always tight as a trainee. But you can donate your time. But the thing I did want to mention is that's not the only way. Like, I think having trainees build a habit of just being active, you know, locally. And so you could be active in your hospital, like, you know, trying to get involved with hospital boards or administrations. Don't be like scared of that. I know we all joke and talk bad about administrators, but the reality is that the best places I've worked are ones where physicians are actually doing a lot of the administrative work, because they really understand what patients and physicians need. The other thing is that you can do things locally as well. And so it kind of overlaps a little bit, Jasmine, with what you were saying, with just being locally active and being a radiation oncologist that's out there educating, giving little talks in schools or to foundations or things like that. I think that really makes a big deal. Not everything is like going to the Hill and like lobbying a politician for a certain bill. And I think if everyone did just like a little bit, I bet you things would be pretty different. Anna, you want to say something?
Yeah. I will give a plug on the whole, you know, day on the Hill thing. Astro does advocacy day. ACRO actually, because I'm getting more involved in the like advocacy stuff on the ACRO side in my role. So I do a lot of like AMA advocacy work, actually flying to Chicago tomorrow for the annual AMA meeting. But anyway, so ACRO as I learned yesterday, actually does like a day on the hill that's virtual. So it's like lower barrier to get involved as like a trainee or and usually it's kind of focused on like the specific, you know, efforts that we're doing. So like right now there's a bill that's being introduced in Congress, like directed at kind of more fair compensation for, you know, specialty practices, which include radiation oncology. So that's going to be coming up mid-September. So stay tuned. I'll kind of keep my tabs on that. But the cool thing too is that just as Matt was saying, I think that especially as I've done advocacy now on the national stage, as well as kind of regionally and locally, there's actually a big potential to make a big like local and kind of regional difference. So things like getting involved in your medical society. So like as a resident, going to like the Michigan State Medical Society and just usually there's like a free dinner and then you get a, you know, hear a lecture from like a, you know, like cool stuff. And actually, again, I don't know if any of you will be in Michigan, but there's like also like with the radiology kind of correlate, the Michigan Radiology Society kind of does things like this that are like research opportunities and advocacy. So it's just like, yeah, not only looking for like the national big ticket things, but just like in your local communities, ways to advocate for our field and for just the need for radiation oncology as a specialty and for appropriate like representation.
Or if you'd be so bold, there's been some doctors that have actually run for office. I will never do that. But if anyone wants to do that, you all are very smart people. It's, you know, I mean, it's, you know, I think that physicians in general, are a very smart group, radiation oncologists even more so. And so, you know, don't limit yourself there. And you certainly, one nice thing about this field is you'll have some time to do this stuff outside of clinic. And so I think definitely don't limit yourself. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So Jasmine, I think we still might hear from you about non-clinical opportunities that things that you're interested in. So whether that's like, you know, kind of this engagement with communities, but yeah, what are your thoughts about things you're excited about?
Sure. So yeah, of course, I'm super, super excited about the community engagement. Also really excited about patient education. I personally think that, you know, just the way that things have been moving and things just in the world. TikTok is a great realm that radiation oncologists have really not tapped into. I follow one radiation oncologist and, you know, he kind of talks about, you know, he has funny TikToks, of course, but also talks about different things, really just educating people. I think it just brings it back to just getting radiation oncology out there and really kind of letting people know what it is and when do I call a radiation oncologist, right? Like, you know, when to call the cardiologist or you know when to go to your OBGYN. People don't know when to go to a radiation oncologist or when to seek one out or find, you know, ask questions and things like that. So I think that that is like one of the, I think like my big plan is to just really have a presence on TikTok, just like you all have this podcast, just to kind of get us out there and talk about, you know, different treatment modalities in radiation oncology specifically. And then, you know, when we can be used in conjunction with other fields and things like that.
That's awesome. And I think there's definitely a, kind of a ripe, you know, available space, as I'm kind of alluding to at the SWRO, like the SWRO. You know, there's really only been a few like radon influencers, and it's, you know, now kind of becoming, I think, a more mainstream thing of just like docs kind of reaching out, like with the Dr. Glockham Flecken, you know, kind of like the really, really funny like things he'll do. And then I think when he featured radon, or maybe
Right? I don't know if it's done yet.
Yeah. I think it's like when it was announced that like he would do it at some point, everyone's like, oh my gosh. But just like the fact that, right, he's covered like so many other fields and not radon, it's like, okay. But yeah, just like bringing more awareness about, and that's such an important point too, I think, just generally of like both from the patient ed standpoint and just like the general med standpoint, like actually a lot of other specialties and general practitioners just think of us as like living in a basement. So like, you know, if they don't know when to call a radonc, and I know like Astro in the past and Arrow have like kind of done some education about like, you know, when to consult a radonc, like from like the primary care doc ed perspective. But I'm really excited you're excited about patient ed stuff. So there's opportunities for that for sure.
Tell us when you do that, because we would love to share. I mean, I think I'll actually admit I tried a little bit, and I think it's me. The platform is I don't like get the platform at all, and I think I'm just aged out of it. And I think that it seems like a place where there's a lot of education happening. And so once you're up there, let us know, and we'd love to publicize that and get that out in front of people, because I think it's an important thing for sure and a great opportunity.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Will. I've kind of been dragging my feet a little bit, just because, you know, it's kind of scary to put out this education, and I just graduated medical school. So I don't want to, you know, say something incorrectly or something like that. So I've been dragging my feet a little bit, but I'm going to get on it, because I think that people would really love it. And I think that people would listen to it. So.
And I think as long as you have a little disclaimer, so I know like one thing, if you guys have listened to other episodes we've had, like there's like a recorded kind of disclaimer of like, you know, these views, you know, just represent our own. And so, you know, as long as you have something like that kind of covers like, you know, this is not meant to replace education from your personal doctor, but just meant to be a general education resource, like something like that. I know there's a lot of like, you know, plastic surgeons and like dermatologists that do these types of things. So, you know, maybe borrowing language from them. But yeah, definitely excited to feature, you know, your TikToks when those come out. So.
Yeah, and don't sell yourself short. I mean, you're a medical doctor, right? I mean, I think you all have graduated medical school. Residency training is practical training, right? Like you are equipped to go out there and certainly teach lay people about the basics of radiation oncology. Once you, especially, I mean, you'll feel very equipped in the first, you know, couple months of your residency as well. So
this has been awesome. Got through all the questions. Yeah.
No, yeah. Actually, we have just a minute or so left. I don't know. Do you want to kick off some closing remarks? I don't know if anyone has any closing thoughts.
Yeah, I think I was just going to, so not quite as fun as Simil's lightning round, because I don't think we quite have time for that, but maybe like the modified, like mini lightning round of just like, maybe in like, you know, like one thought of just like the thing that you're most excited about going forward, RadOnc or not. So maybe we'll start with Ashlyn and then Jasmine and Tony.
I am most excited about just like continuing these conversations like this with people in the field. This has been so much fun. So thank you all so much for having us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I am super excited about, as Ashlyn said, just continuing, you know, these types of conversations, meeting the people that are in radiation oncology. Astro was amazing. Just really, you know, felt like a family there. And I'm also super excited to live on the West Coast.
Awesome. That's a good one too.
I'm really excited to just meet all the people in the community. This is, even tonight's kind of one of my first kind of, you know, exposures to meeting people around the country in the field. So I'm really excited for future things like this. And I really appreciate you having me on this tonight. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, it's been such a pleasure having all of you. You know, I think this has been really energizing for me. Like I know Matt, Simil and I often reflect, like we get really energized after these podcasts, you know, talking with, you know, just like such a, you know, variety of people in our field. And I'm so excited for you guys that you're kind of right at the, you know, start of your careers. And there's so many things to look forward to. And you guys have such great ideas and such great insights. Like I'm honestly shocked about, like, you know, just like, you know, I would not have known all of this, like being at the level you're at, of just like benign RadOnc and like radiopharm and like better representation, community engagement. I mean, these ideas are so exciting. So for me, it's like amazing to hear these, and I can't wait to meet you guys in person.
It's really nice to see, you know, you forget, right? When you're in the day-to-day, you kind of forget what it's like to be super excited to be starting intern year, starting radiation oncology residency. And then in the middle, you're like, I wish I wasn't here. I'm angry. You come out and you finish, and you're going to have a great time. It is a super, you know, it's a field where you're going to make great friends, and we'll definitely look forward to seeing you all in meetings and in person. Excited for the future. Yeah. Thank you all very much. Yeah.
Thanks everyone. And thanks to all of our attendees who joined as well. Brian Lally, and thanks for the shout out. Wishing everyone an awesome night.
And go sign up for Acro. Get your $20 free dinner.
Yes. Definitely do that.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for the reminder.
Oh, in the spring. So, like, for med students and residents, it's free to sign up for Acro. But we'll throw in the $20 DoorDash just to have a dinner. So, all right.
All right. Bye. See you later.
Thank you, guys. Y'all have a good night.
Yeah.